So welcome everybody to the last part of the English evening today, and my guest is Scott Empler. So Scott, do you want to say a few words about yourself, who you are and what you're doing?
Yeah, hi, I'm Scott Empler. I'm one of the co-creators along with Mark Lines, the Discipline Agile Toolkit. I am also the thought leader behind the Agile modeling and the Agile data methods from the early 2000s. And some of you may have seen me speak at earlier OOP conferences in the past.
And you're also the author of Refactoring Databases, the book that I lent to someone and he never returned it. And it's obviously a very useful book. So what we are going to talk about today is data technical debt. And you have a talk about data technical debt as well as technical debt at the conference. So let's start with some definitions. So what is technical debt?
So technical debt is a measure of quality or lack of quality. And, you know, the common metaphor is just like you have financial debt, you know, credit card debt or bank debt or mortgage, you have technical debt. So you have this poor quality throughout your organization, throughout your assets. And it has an effect on your ability to respond and to evolve your systems, evolve your assets.
And the other term is data technical debt, which I assume you coined. So what is data technical debt?
Yeah, I'm not completely sure if I'm the one that coined it. I might have, you know, it's something that a bunch of us have been bouncing around for a few years now. And it's basically recognizing that there are data quality problems and that some aspects of technical debt are actually focused on the data, not just the code, not just the systems. And I think it's something that's been overlooked and is actually a very serious problem in most organizations. And we tend not to deal with it. In many cases, because what I tend to call the cultural divide between, you know, the developers, the systems people, and the data people, and they don't talk well with each other still after all these years. And so, where technical debt is a reasonably common thing in the developer world, it's not that talked about in the data world. And that's a problem because we have very serious data quality problems out there. Mm-hmm.
So one thing that I'm wondering is, what are the consequences of data technical debt? What are some experiences? Obviously, it is something that is important to you. So have you seen any consequences that are very severe, or what made you think about it, and why do you focus on this subject?
Yeah. So if you look at some of the, so first of all, I'll talk about some stats. So Gartner a couple of years ago now basically came out and said that the average organization loses $15 million a year on due to data quality problems. Now this is like mid-sized to large organizations, I would imagine. But HBR, working with I believe IBM, a few years ago, revealed that the U.S. economy loses $3 trillion a year because of poor quality data. So it's a reasonably important thing to be looking at. But to actually take a look at what's happening in your organizations, it results in poor quality information, which then results in poor quality decisions. And I think that's where the real issue is. Like, you know, people don't have the access to the data that they need. The data is old. It's inconsistent with each other. You don't actually have the information that you need. Like, it's probably out there. You just can't get it. It should be there, but it's not because the data in the back end is messed up. So there's a bunch of reasons why you can't get the information that you need right now. And that's impacting your ability to make good decisions.
So what you're basically saying is that there is poor quality of data. So I imagine, for example, that I recently moved to a different city. So maybe there is still the address somewhere around, and they still locate me in Berlin, even though I'm living in Kaiserslautern nowadays. So if I think about that kind of problem, That's quite a different problem from code quality. With code quality, me as a software architect or as a software engineer, it is obviously something that I care about and that I can influence. However, data quality, like the address is outdated, that is something that seems to be related to the business domain. So how can I improve that situation, and why is it something that I should care about?
Well, what happens, and so say, well, you would probably care that your mail isn't getting to you or taking a long time to get to you. But what happens if it was your salary data? And, you know, for some reason your raise didn't go through and you're not being paid, or you're in the wrong tax bracket and you're being taxed more than you should have, or you weren't being taxed sufficiently. And then now suddenly the government comes to you and says, oh, by the way, you owe us, another 30,000 euro because we hadn't bothered to collect it, you know, for the last year or two. So you should care. What would happen to you if your senior executives were making decisions based on cash flow and the cash flow data was wrong? And organizations have gone broke because of this thing, by the way. This is not a made up example. And what was happening was, there a few years ago now, there was an organization where the CFO was maintaining everything in a spreadsheet. And this is a reasonably large organization. So this is might not have been the brightest idea, but they were tracking cash flow in a spreadsheet, and they thought they had more money than they did. So their loans got called and suddenly they were out of business. And then when all this was audited to figure out, well, why did these guys get wiped out? It got tracked back to a spreadsheet and to a miscalculation in a spreadsheet. And the executives were fundamentally, well, just basically making poor decisions, thinking they had money when they didn't. So that's a fairly serious problem that you might want to care about.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more. However, if we stick to that example, I mean, that spreadsheet is probably done by probably even that executive. And me as a software engineer or as a software architect, I've actually never seen it. So how can I influence it? How can I put it on my agenda and improve things?
Yeah, well, you would have to be able to measure things, right? So like certainly the systems that you do have access to are probably working with data. So how much of your code? Yeah. So here's something that a developer should care about. How much of your code do you write that has to translate data because it's coming in the wrong format, or it's inconsistent between two data sources, and you've got to write code that cleans it up, or you've got logic in the UI that is capturing data or displaying it in a different format, so that way people can do whatever they do with it, and then you got to translate it back into whatever the data source wants. I would care about that, and because the fact is that technical debt in your code is the result of poor data quality to begin with. I would recommend fixing the real problem, because the problem is not the technical debt in the code. The problem is the technical debt in the database. And not only do you have that technical debt, now you've got all this code technical debt, and you got to maintain it and all that good sort of stuff. And is it correct? Who knows, right? Is your data being tested? Or worse yet, you've got this, you'll have this shared data source where, you know, your system accesses it and does something with the data. My system accesses it and does something with the data. Are we working under the same business rules? Or am I doing things to the data that then have an effect on your system and vice versa? And now we've both got code on each of our ends cleaning up the mess that the other guy created. And then multiply that by hundreds or thousands, depending on how many systems access that data source. So it really adds up. So it becomes an issue of coupling. So data sources are in most organizations are a source of very high coupling. Because you got all these systems accessing the same data source, right? So because they're a source of high coupling, anything coupled to it has got an issue if there's a quality problem in the data source.
Mm-hmm. So two questions. First of all, so would you recommend to go to the business people and talk to them about data quality and how it should be improved? Because maybe they are the sort of source of the data technical debt. Is that something that you would advise?
Sometimes, yeah. Well, certainly, you know, you should, you know, regardless of what type of technical debt you're talking about, you should be helping to educate the business because they're making decisions around that, around whether or not the technical debt gets injected to begin with. And they're certainly making decisions around whether or not you're going to invest in fixing and addressing those quality problems. So, yeah, the more the better the business understands, probably the better shape you're in. But certainly there's issues around, you know, certainly, you know, they might be creating bad data technical debt, without a doubt. But there's also, you know, some of the decisions they make, you know, the classic, you know, got to be on time and on budget. So it's easier just create another data source rather than use our existing ones, right? So now you've got storage issues, you've got consistency issues and all that good sort of stuff, right? And then all the usual, you know, you got to maintain and support multiple things. So yeah, I would help the business understand that, but it really is on the developers and on whoever's responsible for data stuff in your organization to be working together more effectively to ensure that either you're injecting less data technical debt, but also that you're paying some of it down appropriately.
And the other thing you just mentioned, that if you have a shared database, that leads to very tight coupling. So what do you advise to stay away from shared data sources and shared databases? There is this, I'm not sure whether you're aware of that, but there is this famous tweet that where there is a Star Wars Death Star and a few TIE fighters, and it says those are small microservices and that is the large database, this sort of Death Star. So is that something that you sort of can relate to, where that you do you think we should get rid of those centralized databases and that they are sort of the core of the problem?
No, that's wacky. That might be a problem in some organizations, but you know, it's not the technology. This is where the this is part of the cultural impedance mismatch. The developers don't get it. If it's a microservice with its own database and behind the scenes rather than one big database, who cares, right? You can still have, you know, significant problems with that. The problem that the microservices guys are completely blind to is, what do you do on reporting? What do you, how do you get all this data out of the microservices and then report against it into a data warehouse and BI and all that good sort of stuff? So the fact that you split them into microservices, maybe you've architected things slightly better, or maybe you've just blown it again. Because the fact that it's a large centralized database tells me exactly nothing. It depends on the design of that database. Like, I've seen some phenomenally well-designed centralized databases that the microservices guys would have no hope of ever being as effective as. I've also seen some big databases that are complete dog's breakfast. So, it really does depend. So, you know, that's not the issue. Now, certainly there's the concept of data architecture debt, without a doubt. And frankly, that a lot of data architectures are not the greatest. But then again, a lot of systems architects are not the greatest either. So, it really, yeah. So just telling me it's microservices, telling me it's a centralized database tells me it pretty much nothing. I'd have to go look to see what actually happened rather than, you know, whatever architectural strategy you're using this year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what would your advice be on avoiding technical debt? Is there like some easy to follow things that I should do to avoid data technical debt? Or is there something that a lot of people are doing wrong and that they could easily improve on?
Yeah. There's no easy answer to that, because the answer is it depends. So that's, I guess that's an easy answer. But, it boils down to well, I know you're familiar with Martin Fowler's technical debt quadrant, right? And so in some ways it gets down to that. And in my presentation later on this week, I'm going to be walking through the quadrant and walking through the implications of, you know, what the heck are you doing to make these mistakes in each of these quadrants. But, at the end of the day, it really gets down to, do you have the skills to do the job? Are you thinking the architecture through? Are you thinking the design through? You know, do you understand normalization? There's some basic fundamental concepts in the data world that developers tend to blow. And they're not, tend not to be working well with the data folks. You know, and those are generalizations, but, you know, you'll see developers injecting data technical debt a lot, or, and just normal technical debt to begin with, but, because they don't have the skills to avoid it, to avoid it. So yeah, understanding data architecture, strategies, understanding database design strategies, understanding, how to manipulate and work with data. All just, having the fundamental skills to the job is the critical thing. But yeah, trying to avoid coupling, minimize coupling, which is what, have high cohesion, low coupling. That's basically what data normalization is all about when it gets down to it. So, having basic fundamental concepts like that is critical.
Mm-hmm. So there is a question from in the chat by Rudolf R. And I guess that goes back to the question around the centralized database. And what he asks is, what about a single source of truth for the origin of data and a soap whistle for exchange? And I guess probably also REST nowadays. So I guess the question is, so if we don't use a shared database and instead we have an interface implemented with soap whistle or REST or whatever, would that help? Is that any better than having that shared data centralized database? What's your opinion about that?
So you're basically talking about having encapsulating access to the data,
right?
Classic developer. So, which is great. I'm a firm believer in that. I actually did some of the original work in object relational mapping and database encapsulation. So those are all good things, because you're more than likely reducing coupling when you're doing that. Depends, but more than likely you're reducing coupling, and reducing coupling is generally a good thing. So that's okay. But it still gets back to, the fact that it's a centralized database tells me exactly nothing. It just doesn't. Because there's very good reasons to have a centralized database. There's very good reasons to not have a centralized database. I don't know your environment, so I can't tell you whether or not that's a good strategy until I know the context. So encapsulating access, generally better. But you've also got to remember, it's not just about what you, as a developer or as an architect or whatever it is you're trying to do, is focused on right now. Data is long lasting. It's persistent, by definition. It's a shared resource. It should be a shared asset. So you need to think long term. You need to look beyond whatever application or whatever it is that you're building right now and understand the overall implications at the enterprise level. That's what's going to help make or break you. So bottom line, even though I'm a firm believer in encapsulation layers, at the end of the day, you're never going to have one shared encapsulation layer unless you're a small org, right? The Java guys will be doing their thing. The .NET guys will be doing their thing. The COBOL guys will be doing their thing, and so on, right? And you'll never have one shared strategy. And as a result, you've got more coupling, and you got to maintain it all. So, encapsulating access is probably better than not encapsulating access. But it's not. But that's only solving one aspect of the overall data quality issue. Mm-hmm. Like if you're encapsulating bad data, I don't care what your strategy is, it's still bad data. So we got to look at the big picture on this one.
So one thing that you're saying is it's probably unlikely that you will ever be able to encapsulate data access. So that's a good point. But what you also seem to say is okay. If I have that, if I do have such an encapsulation, then there would be more decoupling. So can you explain that in more detail? Because if I do a select statement on a shared database and I do the very same thing, it's just that I do it with REST or SOAP, I get all the customer data and there is a SOAP service that gives me all the customer data. I don't see how that would increase encapsulation, because it's just a different way of doing the same thing.
Yes, but you're assuming that everybody has a clue. So and they don't. So here's the so the idea: if you force everybody through your encapsulation layer, you can then and there's multiple multiple strategies to implement that. You then are in a position where you can start enforcing access control easily in a consistent manner. You can access, you can enforce business rules, you can enforce calculations, consistent calculations, and that's a big thing. You also, what also happens is, you know, you've got the encapsulation layer accessing the data somehow, might not just be SQL, but something, right? So it get, you know, so you got the encapsulation layer, it's accessing the data, and then all the programs are hitting the encapsulation layer. Now you're in a position where the development tools are generally better than the data tools. So if I am trying to figure out, tracing, where my bugs are and figuring, refactoring and good stuff like that, because I now have my application code coupled to my encapsulation strategy, I've probably got better tooling and better testing and all that good sort of stuff for my code than I do for the database. So I've improved my ability to actually write cleaner code. If I've got the skills to write cleaner code, to test better, to refactor more easily, so there's definitely that. And if I built the encapsulation layer right, then I can enforce critical business rules and calculations at that layer. But here's where it all falls apart. How do you do reporting? How do you get at, the data warehousing and business intelligence stuff is a lot different than the application stuff. So I'm still going to be coupling my DWBI stuff to that data source somehow as well. And I've still got the business rule issue and that. But I've more than likely decoupled. I've more than likely made it easier by doing that with those sorts of strategies than if I had like 100 apps hitting, with the hard-coded SQL hitting the database. But architectural trade-offs, right? Mm-hmm. You're always going to have coupling, no matter what you do. And coupling is, the root of all evil. So,
yeah. So that's probably like the golden rule of software architecture, I guess. So the other thing I'm wondering is, if there is so much data technical debt, how do you remove it? I mean, obviously, as you said, databases are persistent and there is all the data in the database. That's obvious. So refactoring them is hard. So once you have poor data quality or maybe even a bad database schema, what's your way out of that? What's your advice on it?
Yeah, so it's nasty. You need to gain database refactoring skills and database testing skills. So one of the challenges that we see because of the divide between the developers and the data folks is that there's very different strategies and way of looking at quality issues and addressing quality issues. So generally, the data community is trying to get everything right up front, and then they don't. The just nature of the beast. So, or they might get it up right up front, but things change on them, or somebody else comes in and fiddles with things, usual reality type issues. So unfortunately, they've been slow to adopt basic, things that developers consider fairly basic, like automated regression testing and refactoring tools and good stuff like that. So, those are generalizations, right? There's some organizations that are pretty sophisticated when it comes to database development, but for the most part, it's like it was 15 years ago. So like for developers 15 years ago. So it's early days in most cases for basic refactoring. And, question ask yourself is, if I went into your organization tomorrow and said, show me your customer database. Oh, okay, great. Oracle, blah, whatever. Where's your database regression test suite? Automated regression test suite for it. In many organizations, they wouldn't even know what I'm talking about. Whereas if I asked you, where's your regression test suite for that application over there? Oh, here it is. And it might not be the greatest, but you'd still have one. And you'd know what I'm talking about. And you'd probably have a good idea what you still want to do to get it better. But on the database testing side, very few organizations have their act together yet. So because they are struggling with basic things like automated regression mm-hmm. testing, it becomes hard to refactor, right? You know, as you know, you can't safely refactor code unless you can test it and make sure you didn't break things, or at least have tools that can sort of detect if you broke things or probably broke things.
So would you, is your advice to invest in such tests and build up a test suite? Is that what you would do as a first step, or would you advise for something different? I mean, obviously it's a rule of thumb, but you know.
Yeah, I'd start digging my way out of the hole, right? So if data is a corporate asset, right? So let's go after some of the rhetoric now, right? Everybody said, I don't really run into any firm that will tell me, oh no, data is not an asset. We don't care about data, right? Like, no, I always hear, well, data is their lifeblood. And it, of course, is a corporate asset. And then, and as soon as somebody spews that nonsense, and like most of the time it's nonsense, first thing out of my mouth is, really, what about your regression test suite? You don't have one? Well, then it's not an asset then, is it? If you've got no plan to, improve it and validate it and all this stuff, then you really, it's not really an asset. So listen to your rhetoric. If you want your data to be a corporate asset, and I suspect you do, then treat it like a corporate asset. Step up and do your jobs. And so start putting the tests in place that you need to validate. Just like I hope your code is considered an asset, at least some of your code is considered an asset. I would also want my data to be an asset, and I would invest in automated tests for that. And I would want to be able to clean it up. So just like, when I see poorly written code that is critical to my organization, I'm going to fix that problem because that's important. If I see poor quality data that's important to my organization, I'm going to clean it up. Right. And it has a very interesting side effect. If you start like I said earlier, because of the high coupling of systems to the data, even in an encapsulation layer, there's still implied coupling. You go to the encapsulation layer, then you go down to the data. Right. If I've got data quality problems, then I'm potentially coupled to those data quality problems, and I'm probably cleaning things up, in multiple places now, as a result. And even if it's only one app, Even my encapsulation layer is doing a dandy job of cleaning things up. I've still got any reporting going on and stuff like that. And there's cleanup, ETL jobs that get cleanup going on. So this is an expensive problem, and that is pervades multiple systems in your organization. So I would highly suggest getting it at the source.
So what I find interesting is, What you just said is that a lot of organizations seem unaware that they should have tests for their data. So if I talk to some software engineer who's doing coding, they are usually aware of the fact that they should actually test their code. That seems to be different for the data community, as you said. And that leads me to the question. So if I talk about code technical debt, usually I can talk to an engineer and they say, okay, we know that here are some challenges and we know that there is technical debt and it's bad or not too bad. Do you feel that people are more unaware of the data technical debt that they might have compared to the technical debt that they have in the code? So is it something that is hidden and that is not, that they don't know about because they don't think in these terms?
I think the data people have a pretty good clue that they've got data problems. What they don't have an idea about is how they can actually fix them coherently. They often they don't really know how to avoid it. They've got, a lot of them still believe in the big upfront modeling and all that sort of stuff. And, let's lock down access to the database, not let the developers use it. And that's just not realistic. And you know what? If they try doing that, what do the developers do? They go around them, they create a new data source, and then they do whatever they got to do. So we need to be realistic. And the traditional data quality strategies are what got us into this mess, right? And I go into organizations, and they'll be finger pointing, right? It's the data guys going, they'll be saying, well, we're responsible for data quality, we should have control, blah, blah, blah. And it's the developers who are at fault. Well, okay, so then you just told me you have control, but then clearly you don't if it's the developers that are messing everything up, right? And that's sort of a aha type of a conversation. But yeah, when they're not talking about testing in a coherent manner, then they really don't get quality. It's just, you know, different than night and day, right? So they're not doing, because the thing is that, you know, in the old days, with waterfall development, they would do all the modeling up front. They would figure out the database design, and they would throw it over the wall to the developers, who would then use it and all that sort of stuff. And eventually, it would get to be tested. So the data guys just wipe their hands of that and not really worrying about testing. And then they would complain about quality problems. Or what they would do is, their idea of fixing data quality was to catch the poor quality data in their ETL jobs. That's what the T in ETL is transform. So they would, you know, they'd have this poor quality data source. They would do transformations to hopefully clean it up for the data warehouse. And then they would report on it, and, you know, things would happen from there. So, but then they've got, and then when you're dealing with multiple data sources, you've got like all the timing problems and RI problems and all this sort of stuff. So, because it's not, you know, a lot of it's not real time, or, yeah, it's quasi real time. Mm-hmm.
So we are almost at the end of our conversation. I will put a link to agiledata.org in the show notes. So if people want to know more about Data Technica Debt and the challenges with that, there will be a few links. Is there anything else you would like to add? Anything that I didn't ask you that you feel I should have asked you?
No, I think this is good. I ask you to have patience and to be aware of this issue and realize that we do need to work together. You know, the development community, the data community needs to find better ways of working together, which is what the Agile Data stuff was all about. The techniques are out there. I did not talk about any theory here today whatsoever. I did not talk about anything that I haven't done myself, haven't seen myself in multiple organizations. It is possible. There's no magic here. A lot of hard work, but there's no magic. So it's possible. And, you know, earlier we were talking about the Refactoring Databases book. Now it's old. It's like about 15 years old. But, you know, if you've got the ability to type in code from a book, like, you know, assuming you've got no budget for tools and can't use the internet to download tools, you know, even in that environment, you, as long as you can type in code from a book, you can do database refactoring too. It really is that straightforward. And I would recommend tools, but, you can type it in by hand if you like doing that sort of thing.
Yeah, so there is light at the end of the tunnel. So thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for discussing it with us this evening. There will be another episode tomorrow at lunch, then in German, I'm afraid. I'll put it in the show notes. So thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for being here, and enjoy the conference. And I'm looking forward to your talks, of course.
Thank you. Thank you.